You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Well, hello and welcome to TFM's local watering hole. I'm so excited to be back. We got a great episode for you. And with me, as she is always, Storm Chaser Christy Morris.
Somebody poison the water hole.
There's a snake in my boot. No, we're not actually going to be talking about Toy Story.
No, I'm just saying, you know, the watering hole, it's relatable to talking about tornadoes and rain and hail and stuff, so...
There you
Here
go.
We are.
There you go. Oh, man, I love it.
You're welcome.
Sorry, that was just really unexpected. Oh, gosh. Well, we are going to have a great time because we're going to be diving into the movie Twisters that came out last year. Of course, we talked about the movie Twister, the original, recently, and so we wanted to dive into this film now. Before we get into that, of course, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. We would absolutely appreciate it if you did us a favor and gave us a star rating review on a place like Apple Podcasts. Of course, Spotify is a great place to give ratings to because you can do that. And that helps people find the show. Another great way to help people find the show is to share us with your friends. Tell your friends if you like this show, let them know, hey, you should be listening to the 602 Club. You can also share us out on social media. So make sure you're following us over on X Twitter at the 602 Club. We can also be found on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM. Of course, the entire network is on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And if you wanted to talk to listeners from all over the world about all the different shows that are happening, you could go over to the Babel Conference on Facebook, which is our listeners only discussion group, and join that. Of course, you can also find us online at trek.fm and see all of the shows we're doing. And then if you do like all the things that we're doing here on the network, you can support us over at Patreon at patreon.com/trekfm. We would greatly appreciate that. It definitely costs a lot to put all of this on, and we want to keep bringing all of these shows to you. So help us out when you can. But Christy, I'm really interested in this one because I remember having a pretty visceral reaction when I heard they were going to do a sequel to Twister. And so I'll tell everybody about that, but I'm very excited to kind of find out when you heard, oh yeah, we're going to take that beloved movie from the 90s, kind of a cult classic at this point, and we're going to make a sequel to it. What was going through your mind?
Well, I mean, it's probably not a shock to anyone that's listened to us before that my opinion on sequels is that you've got to do it carefully. So I think definitely my feeling initially when they announced this one was trepidation because you and I loved the original so much, and it really had an all-star cast. Yeah. It's hard to hold a candle to that. And I'm glad it wasn't a full-blown just remake, but I don't know that it really feels like a sequel either in that sense. It kind of feels like a remake. But I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I was cautious and was given a little more hope when I saw Glenn Powell was cast as one of the leading characters because I had seen him in Top Gun Maverick.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah,
that helped a little bit. What about you?
Like you said, I don't think it's any surprise to anyone who listens to us that I would also feel very similar to what you did, which is this just seems incredibly strange. Of all the movies from that era, you know, to trying to create a sequel to
this long
like,
later,
how do you? Yeah, it just, you know, I don't really, where are you going to go with this? I guess was one of my questions. And then how are you going to create a sequel? Obviously, you know, one of the things that we had seen is that you had done that recently with a movie like Top Gun Maverick, you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people also wondered, okay, kind of how do you make a sequel to this? How do you make it good? And they found a way to do that. I will say, though, I think one of the big differences between something like Top Gun Maverick and this is that that seems to be a thing that lends itself to a sequel in many ways, because the character of Maverick can have other stories, I think, very easily in the world that had been created for him. And this one, you know, with Bill Paxton, of course, having passed away, it is more difficult, of course, to even connect it with the previous iteration. And it also just kind of made me wonder, what's the story here, right? Like, what are we going to do? And I think you rightly kind of pointed out, too, one of the big questions that comes up in this is like, okay, and then not only what is the story, but where are you going to find a cast that kind of comes across the same way that cast did, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think you were, right on target when you mentioned just the way in which there was something really interesting about the way that cast all played together. I think that they did a great job not only of casting, but there was just something about the way all those people played off of each other. All of that just really interesting. And so, yeah, that I think it's just one of those things where it's an incredibly strange thing in just about anybody's mind when they're like, okay, Twister, mm-hmm. that deserves a sequel. How? You know? And so I don't know. I would love to hear from listeners, you know, if there was anybody who, unlike us, was immediately on board and just thought like, oh, no, that sounds like a great idea. I think they're going to pull that out. You know, I would love to hear that because, you know, to me, that's great. And I want to know how you got there. So, you know, hit us up over on social media and let Christy and I know if you were in a different position than we were. So, mm-hmm. I think you really rightly called out something, which was one of the hallmarks of that original film was the cast. And it came down to, in many ways, I think, the fact that Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton, we talked about this on the show when we did the episode on Twister, that those two, they had a chemistry. There was something about them that I think you just kind of bought into. And following them was really enjoyable. There's just something about them where they also had a real sense of fun, I think, about them with all of this. And so then they have that supporting, you know, kind of cast of oddballs. But I think then it is really important for us. We've got to start with the leads. Like, Daisy Edgar Jones and Glenn Powell are stepping in to some relatively big shoes here to fill because, you know, if they don't do the job that the other two were able to in the first film, this movie's probably not going to work because, you know, you would basically be setting this movie up to fail. And so, first, this story, instead of kind of revolving around the Bill Paxton character, which we, you know, got in the first movie, he's our kind of main point of entrance. This movie, our main point of entrance is with Daisy Edgar Jones, Kate. And so how do you think she fills those shoes? And does she keep your interest then in this film in a way that helps this movie have the vitality it needs to really carry it.
So first thing I will say is one thing that hurts her, unfortunately, and it's not her fault, is just that Helen Hunt also was already such an established actress that I think people instantly buy her in that role. And you kind of needed someone similar to do this movie. So I think for me personally, that just kind of hurt it a little bit that we didn't have someone that, although maybe is a younger actress, have some of that built-in rapport already to play this role. So being someone completely new to me didn't hold as much weight for me as having someone as established as Helen Hunt. However, I will say that I think Daisy Edgar Jones does well. I do think that her character arc is really interesting, and seeing it from her perspective instead of from the male perspective is interesting. I also like that they mix it up and it's not about, you know, how in the original movie it was about how the two main characters were trying to get divorced and then fall back in love, which works. But I think, you know, it's...
Yeah, for that movie.
Yeah. But I think here it's cool to go in a new direction and not tell that same story background-wise.
No, I think that's a great point. This movie does not try to repeat that. In fact, you know, one of the things you get for Kate as a character is that, you know, she is dealing with the aftermath of somebody she loved very much having died very recently in her life, you know, just a few years previous to this. And that kind of creating this disconnect between who she used to be as a storm chaser and somebody who is trying to escape that life and so that she can forget. And so I think that that's really interesting. It gives the character a nice backstory. You know, I think you mentioned, you know, Helen Hunt being more known. I mean, at that point she had been on Mad About You. But I think, you know, there's something about, for me, not really knowing Daisy Edgar Jones. You know, I had never seen Where the Crawdads Sing. I know that was a big book. Mm-hmm. A lot of people saw the movie. I didn't really know her from anything. And so, to me, her coming into this, you know, I don't carry any baggage when she comes on screen, which is in some ways, it's, you know, when you cast a more unknown character to a lot of people, that can be really helpful for your film because there's nothing about the character you're kind of bringing in and expecting them to be or to do. And so she just got to be herself. And I guess in that sense, I buy the character as she portrays it because I don't know her from anything else. And so she's just inhabiting this character. She just is this character. And so for me, that part just works. But I also found her to be an interesting character to follow. You know, which is something that you want. You know, the struggle that she has of having this ambition to try and stop a tornado and then that, you know, leading to the death of her boyfriend, you know, and that putting her in a place where, you know, she doesn't quite know what to do next other than just run away. And so I liked her in the role. I thought she did a great job. And, you know, there was nothing about her that I didn't really enjoy watching or anything like that. I thought she was a good choice, and I thought she pulled off the role well. And I thought she was also believable in that sense. And I think then one of the things that made her a really interesting character to follow then in this film was her going from being somebody who was kind of incredibly bold and adventurous, right? And then losing that. And then regaining that throughout the rest of the film, which I really enjoyed, you know, watching her kind of regain her confidence and regain herself, especially then, you know, of course, through her relationship with Tyler. And that I thought that that was something that was really enjoyable to watch, and which is important because, again, that's one of the main story points here for the film. And again, if it didn't, if she doesn't do it right, if it doesn't work, you're kind of going to be up a creek without a paddle, because it's like, well, nobody's going to want to watch or really enjoy this movie. And so I thought she did a great job on that.
And I will say, I like that they also adjusted the story to have it not just about learning information about tornadoes like they did with Dorothy in the first movie, but rather this is a new idea about how to tame a tornado, as she kept saying. So that was a cool addition as well to this story and to her character. Only other thing that I would have liked a little bit more is chemistry between her and Glenn Powell. For me, it just wasn't really there. And I think if you're going to start that kind of story with having her and her boyfriend introduced first, and then also that later Javi had feelings for her, that you could also then have better chemistry and, you know, a kiss scene of her and Tyler at some point that they left out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about it before we get to Tyler. You know, you mentioned one of the things that they do end up leaving out of the film was that there was a kiss at some point in the movie. I think it was at the end. Mm-hmm. And so why do you feel like that was needed for their chemistry? Do you think that would have just helped them be able to sell that? And I guess maybe then, you know, what just doesn't work for you?
I think it would have sold it better for me, and also just makes sense as a natural end for her arc in this movie, because she is finally, like you said, comfortable going back out and being excited about chasing tornadoes again, excited to get back into her work and to be doing this alongside him, it seems, as a partner in crime. I think it would have been a really nice way to wrap it up. It felt unfinished because the way that they're just standing there in the airport. Like, if you're going to have him run after her, the natural conclusion usually is the kiss. And you could have done it in a way where it's like she kisses him, so it feels more like it's about her, but you needed something.
Okay. Yeah. And I think you make a great case for that. The interesting part about this for me personally is that I really enjoy their chemistry on screen, and I thought that that was really I thought it was good. I enjoyed the way they were interacting. I enjoyed that in some ways. There's a much more like chaste nature to it. You know, they're not immediately jumping to a physical relationship. I thought the way that the two characters kind of fought, like, what was really great was to me that their interactions were so, they felt kind of so genuine instead of like forced or, I think so many times in films these days, it's almost as if writers feel that they have to have characters jump in bed together,
right,
or something like that, for there to be chemistry, right? And so one of the things that I thought just worked incredibly well for me here was that the way in which the character romance then happens between them is felt more real in that sense, where you know, you're pursuing somebody, you're not quite sure if they like you or if you like them or how it's going to go. But what you do is you spend time really trying then to get to know that person, who they are. Like, that's actually what creates, and, you know, both of us are married, you know, and that's actually what creates lasting relationships, right? Is like, you actually have to know who the person is, not just whether or not, you know, they're quote unquote, you know, good in bed. Those things don't last forever in relationships, and they aren't everything in a relationship. For the most more the much more important part of a relationship is that almost like the friendship, mm-hmm. you know, the camaraderie and all that. And to me, that's what they actually sold so well in the film. And a big part of that, to me, to jump to Glenn Powell, I think was the way in which Glenn Powell plays somebody who's incredibly masculine and at the same time shows himself to also be incredibly chivalrous mm-hmm. and how that's still valid because the way that he treats Kate, the way that he actually kind of treats everybody around him that he cares about is somebody that isn't just all about him, right? He has this kind of big, loud persona, but a lot of that is just a persona to because he's so overjoyed at the life that he gets to live, right? Yeah. And it's not really being about a jerk. You know, he's not a jerk,
mm-hmm.
Really. He just is having so much fun with what he does for a living. And then his pursuit of her, he doesn't just assume, oh, I'm the hot guy, so she's going to have to like me, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought there was something really interesting about playing the part that way because even good-looking guys can be people who just don't automatically assume that somebody's going to like them just because of the way they look, you know? He just comes off as such more of a well-rounded character. And to me, I think in many ways, it's his betrayal that really makes this work even more so than hers. I think, you know, he becomes the standout star for the movie. I think he does a fantastic job in it. And, you know, it's funny because I remember seeing the trailers for this film and being like, oh, Glenn Powell's in this? I want to see this.
Right.
Right. Even though I wasn't sure about the movie, him being in it after seeing him in Top Gun Maverick was the thing that drew me in. And then interestingly, the way he plays that Top Gun Maverick character, you think that's what you're going to get in this movie,
mm-hmm.
and he kind of feels like he's, you know, he has that persona almost at the beginning, but as the movie goes, that melts away and you find out this guy has so many more layers to him. The dude is like a piece of great chocolate cake, just completely layered. And every time you get to the next part of the layer, you're like, oh, that's delicious. And, you know, and that's what you want from your characters, right? And I think that's one of the reasons why he's become a star, you know, and because he just has that kind of gravitas on screen that we really haven't had in a long time. I'm singing the praises of Glenn Powell. But I think, to me, that's why the relationship part works, mainly because Glenn Powell, I think, is the one who sells that relationship to me.
And I do agree with you on that for sure. I think that he just sells it a little better. And I'm thinking too specifically of the rodeo scene. To me, it was either the body language or maybe even just to me, she looks a little younger than him. That scene in particular just felt like it was two strangers sitting together, not two people on a possible date.
Yeah. I'll just interject, you know, that's kind of that's that moment where they are the strangers who are almost like filling each other out,
yeah.
You know, and it's that then experience of them going through that life and death experience, which brings them, I think, that to that place where, oh, this is a person that I can trust, like, mm-hmm. You know,
like when push comes to shove, which is we're going to do what we need to do.
Yes, exactly. When push comes to shove, this is a person that I can literally trust with my life. When we're talking about the idea of, you know, a romantic relationship, that's one of the most important pieces of that, which is, can I trust this person?
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I did like the way that they played out as well. Javi seeing what's happening. And having to come to grips with the fact that she didn't choose him, that she does have a lot of care for him, but that it's not going to be romantic love. And so I thought that was played well. And I think that just to echo your sentiments about Glenn Powell, he is so charismatic. He can really, it seems, lean into whatever role he's given. And I think he does that so well here. He really ends up playing out the more vulnerable sides of the character.
Agreed.
More than you would expect. And also come across as that all-American Oklahoma guy.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's so interesting, I think, in the film that he comes off as, like you mentioned, the all-American Oklahoma guy. And I think in that it's, he's a man's man, right? Like when you think, you know, all these things. And, and yet there isn't that machismo. There isn't that just like bravado in some ways that isn't earned, because he really earns that in this film.
And he treats women well, like you said.
Exactly. Exactly. But he's also a gentleman, you know, and he cares about more than himself. You know, we've talked about so many times, you know, on this podcast about this idea of the selfishness versus the selflessness. And in the end, too, he's in this for the fun. But when push comes to shove, he's also the person who's willing to put his life on the line for others, even though he may not know them. And so, you know, as we talk about these leads together, I think that they do the job then that we needed them to do, to make, you know, the kind of the movie itself work on that front. But then on the other side, you know, big part of Twister is all of those oddballs that you have traveling with you. And I mean, you've got all of these people who, you know, many of them who go on to be even more famous, some who already are a name at that point. But I mean, like, you know, you think of Philip Seymour Hoffman, who just his career explodes. And so how do you feel like each one of these people kind of does? Is there any of them that stand out in the same way that they did in Twister? And yeah, or is this just kind of more one of those things where you're, yeah, they're there and they're fine, but it's not as though like anybody's blowing my hair back.
I feel kind of the latter. and I'd be curious to hear if maybe you felt the same, but I think that the direction that they went with the casting was fine. I think, in fact, you have a great opportunity to be able to mix it up and bring in some new people here, or, you know, like they did with people of different races or ages or whatever, because that just really works. You're supposed to have this ragtag group of all experience levels and specialties working together. But Lily, as a character, that actress, Sasha Lane, I don't know if she was putting on an accent or if that's just her natural accent, but it was hard to understand sometimes. And I think overall, just they didn't really get a lot to do, I think, as much as the characters did in the first film. So I felt like these characters were forgettable.
I 100% agree with you. I think, you know, if there's any point where this movie, you know, doesn't quite reach the heights in the sense of when we're talking about the characters, it's definitely this ragtag group of oddballs. They just don't quite have, I think, like you mentioned, really it comes down to the script not really giving them that same opportunity. I think that's really what it is. I don't think it's anybody's acting or anything like that. They're just not truly given the opportunities in the script is written. I think that the only one to me that really stands out as kind of being an interesting character, and it's pretty understated, the journey that you get from him is Ben. you know, the journalist who's from London.
Yeah.
And what's so fascinating is obviously you start the film and he's just terrified of everything, you know, and he's dressed up in all of this, you know, brand new outdoor gear, you know, everything is pristine. And then by the time the film ends, right, he's in a, you know, a plaid shirt, some like, you know, work-like pants and a cowboy hat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has truly kind of chilled out and almost, it seems like, become more comfortable even in his own skin. You know, he's found a new sense of himself. And so, you know, I think that he's the one that really kind of stands out. Obviously, Boone is the character who gets kind of the most to do in the sense of having lines and interactions with, you know, Glenn Powell or the rest of them. He kind of is the face because he's the hype man on this, you know, YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, none of them particularly other, I think, than really Ben are interesting because they all just seem like a character to be kind of in this group instead of people that almost feel more real. And in all honesty, I think that's probably my only, so far, real complaint about the movie.
And so,
you know, I think in the end, the only thing that you could have done is you if you wanted them to kind of have more to do, you needed to rewrite the script in a way that allowed those characters to have moments to which portrayed a part of their personality
mm-hmm.
that made them kind of come alive more than just kind of being an archetypal character that comes in a group, you know?
Yeah. Well, and there is one thing I'm recalling as we're talking about this group as well that I just want to add in. I think it did hurt a little here not having the aspect of someone like Meg from the first movie where, you know, we were really visiting Helen Hunt's character's family in that movie and got to have that whole scene of the crew having breakfast at Meg's house. And I think that gives it much more of that warmth and family feel and also gives you more time to get to know those crew characters.
True.
That you didn't get here. And I get why, because we're focusing on Kate's story and she is not in that place in her life. And the only person there at her house is her mother.
Sure.
It's not going to be that vibe.
Yeah.
But I wish we had that maybe like Tyler's family.
Yeah.
Would have been a great way to add that in because we don't get any information about his background other than he's from Oklahoma as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Great point. You know, Mara Tierney as her mom and that the whole dynamic. I think, you know, one of the interesting aspects of this film is that because these two characters don't know one another, they don't have a history together. This script needed them to be able to spend more time with one another kind of in a more intimate aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But that dynamic allows, you know, especially Tyler to be able to learn more about Kate and Kate to kind of get an understanding of more of who Tyler is away from basically the cameras, you know, away from the hype of, you know, them being on these kind of different sides. And then, of course, you know, after going through that life and death experience, I think they're much more willing to kind of let their guard down and do that. And so I think you're right. You know, that scene in the original movie does give you that opportunity to pick up on all the little subtle character things for all of the, you know, background characters that you can't get here because we don't have that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, though, I appreciate that the movie isn't just trying to be Twister 2.0 in the sense we took the exact same type of script and we're just trying to replicate that you know, that's one of the things I think that helps with this movie is that it does understand that it can't do that. There's a lot about this movie that's similar, mm-hmm. but the differences are who we're going to focus on and why. And I think, you know, the choices then that they make with that, even though I said that might be, you know, the thing that I might, you know, criticize about the movie the most. On the other side, I think the movie clearly knows what it wants to be about. And then what do we do in the script to make that happen? Mm-hmm. You know, so.
Yeah.
So I got to ask you then about the villains of the film. And first, I just kind of want to ask you about the general plan is, you know, because it's a little bit, I don't know. It's a little bit strange, you know, that they're going to go around trying to figure out how to map Twisters so they can have a better understanding of where they're going to go. So then they can go into those places where those Twisters have gone and lowball people who have bad insurance so that they can, you know, buy up land and create, you know, I guess cheap housing for people. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm really interested to hear what you think kind of about that part of the movie, because that's the big bad, you know, really in the film.
Yeah, I think it was a little clunky. I think they definitely should have made it make sense more, because I think you have to do one or the other. Either they are a team of scientists trying to go out and do their own Twister research in a different way than Kate is, or they are swooping in right after natural disasters to buy property from people. But trying to do both, it doesn't really make sense. I think that, you know, obviously that one small tie of it's after a tornado, yes, links it together, but it feels very forced, and that it doesn't really need to be storm par to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you feel that way too?
I think that the way you said it, where it's like, this just feels a little bit clunky. And I agree. I think that there's something that just doesn't quite flow about it as well as you want it to, you know, I mean, that's kind of the beauty of the first movie is your main villain is this guy who's stolen your ideas and just trying to do the same thing that you're trying to do, you know, before you can do it and take credit. Right.
Yeah.
That's kind of like classic, corporate espionage, all that stuff that we're so used to. And I think that really works. And in this movie, they didn't want to quite do the same thing. And yet I do agree. Clunky is just a great word for that.
Yeah, thanks.
And so it just doesn't quite work. But in some ways, they create this in the sense like it just doesn't matter, you know? Because really what you need is, especially for Javi, played by Anthony Ramos, you know, you need for him to have a secret that he's hiding from Kate that further drives a wedge between them, relationally on both fronts, you know, relationally, personally, relationally, professionally, and then even the hope of there being some sort of, you know, romantic relationship there. And so by him doing this, he just shows himself to be the type of man she doesn't want to be with, right? Mm-hmm. And it allows there to be then that comparison to, you know, who Glenn Powell's character Tyler is. And so, yeah, I mean, and I think Anthony Ramos is fine. He doesn't do anything for me in the sense he doesn't do anything amazing. I don't think he's great. I don't think he's bad. I just think he does the job well. But you know, there wasn't anything super dynamic about him or anything like that as a character or even just as the actor playing the character that I was drawn to. So, it almost felt like to me, maybe it would have been better to cast somebody who feels like a little bit more of a threat to Glenn Powell's Tyler in the relationship side than Anthony Ramos's character turns out to be. Because there's no threat there, you know?
Right. Like, you feel like Tyler could take him.
It's not just that, but they're, you know what I'm saying? Like
Kate doesn't have any feelings for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like he's not being
his vibe is off.
Yeah.
From what, you know, Kate would want in the first place. Right.
Yeah.
So,
well, and I will add that I don't know if this was more of a directing choice, but, Javi also doesn't seem to be, trying hard enough, or, you know, I guess showing enough emotion toward Kate. It feels like his feelings are like lukewarm until he's like, there's a time when I would have done anything for you. I'm like, okay, there's the passion we're looking for.
Yep.
So maybe it was a directing choice.
I think it could be either that or, you know, it's John Mills always says it comes down to the director and them asking for things, you know, because that's their role as the director. And so, you know, I think I could lay this at the feet of him. But I also just think, too, he just doesn't quite sell it. Whereas, you know, David Cornensweat, who's about to play Superman, which is funny, dude comes off as such a tool.
Yes.
So well.
He did do well with that.
He just... Right? Like, he is a guy that you completely want to punch in the face. And I think that's great in that sense. Like, that's exactly... So, you know, Jonas, Cary Elwes, who played Jonas in Twister, like, right, you just wanted to punch that dude in the face.
Yep.
Like, he was just... that's what Cornensweat is able to do here. As Scott, oh man, you just can't stand this dude, and that's what we needed in the film, and it what's I think kind of interesting then will be I mean, this is really the only thing that I've seen him in, and so going from this to then seeing him play Superman this summer in 2005 as James Gunn's Superman comes out. That's going to be an interesting change because obviously the character of Superman, completely different.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is also like, he looks like Henry Cavill's little brother.
Right. he's a little too green.
Yeah, a little bit.
But yeah, I think that he is excellent here as Scott. Exactly like you said, he really gets across that jerk factor with this character and is giving Javi a hard time. And really is kind of just here to play the new Jonas. I do think same thing of like there could have been a little bit more for him to do here. But they did do a good job initially of introducing him with the back and forth of Javi between Scott and Kate. Trying to figure out who's going to be leading the group the right way. So that was well. That went well, but I think overall he just, you know, has a couple tiny scenes and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I wanted to ask you this because the movie they were originally going to film a lot of this in Georgia and then they decided to not do that and to go back to Oklahoma. And so was that the right call?
I don't know. I feel like the landscape definitely makes sense. I mean, if you're going to say that the people are in Oklahoma, hey, why not be in Oklahoma? But I think that obviously when you look at the background on the making of the movie, it caused a lot of problems because there were literally tornadoes happening when they're trying to film this. Yeah. And so they had to keep stopping for safety.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it makes making a movie really difficult.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that front. It does make it difficult, but I think you know, I've been to Georgia and I've been to Oklahoma, and the landscape is different enough that you can't just substitute one for the other. So like the first movie where we talked a lot about this idea of being in Oklahoma and it being, for the most part, they film most of that movie in Oklahoma. It becomes a character, right?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting too, you know, because from the last time that they were there to this time they're there, the landscape has changed, you know, with those big windmills and things like that that just didn't exist previously. And then now those type of things are in a place like Oklahoma. And so, no, I think it worked. I think it was a great choice. And, you know, obviously this movie is incredibly driven, not just by characters, but about the visual effects, because we need the tornadoes to feel better and more real than they did in the original. And obviously technology has changed quite a bit since then too. So how did this work for you? Did they live up to what you would want to see from a movie that came out in 2024? And as, you know, compared to a movie that came out, what was it, 1996?
Yeah.
So, how did the visual effects end up working for you in this film?
I was impressed. I think there were times, of course, when you look at how the, like when they said that there were twin tornadoes, maybe looked a little bit goofy at first. But overall, mm-hmm. I think that there was obviously special attention paid to having great effects. I think that for me, the greatest thing about this movie in particular is the action in combination with the effects. I really felt the tension in every single one of those scenes because of how well these two were done and married together. So I give major props for all of that. And even, you know, if you compare the goofy scene in the first film with Cal, another Cal.
Yeah.
To now having the house or something fly past Javi as he's trying to drive. I loved the addition of this now having a manufacturing plant that explodes and they've got fire swirling in the sky. It's a cool what if scenario.
Yes, I agree. I'm glad that you brought that up because I think that was really kind of the standout scene for me VFX wise. I thought they did a really good job. I also did think that they did a great job at the end of the movie with the big tornado and when she's driving towards it and the truck getting pulled along the ground and all. There's a lot of great stuff that they did in this movie. So,
the fireworks.
Visual effects in this sense are always going to be difficult, no matter how good they are, because creating particles and wind and dust and putting that all together is always going to be something that doesn't quite live up to reality. But I think they do a good job here. And it was important that the movie looked better than the original. And I think they did a good job with that. So
yes. And not swirling cows.
Exactly. Yeah. There are no flying cow. Although I'm guessing that, you know, VFX wise, there are probably hidden flying cows in the tornadoes somewhere.
Well, there was a chicken.
The same way. Yeah. The same way that, R2-D2 would show up in space scenes in the prequels. They'd be like, if you zoom in here, you can see, you know, so anyway.
Nice.
What did you think about the soundtrack? Because obviously the soundtrack was incredibly important in the original film, involving lots of different types of artists, from Van Halen to many others. And in this film, almost exclusively, we go with country music. What did you think of that choice? And does it work for you then to create the overall feel for this movie? And in some ways, I guess maybe to set it apart from the previous film.
I definitely agree with your point that this does set it apart as having a different music style and showing that, you know, they're embracing more of the country roots of what Oklahoma is, because it is. I love country music, and I thought that was a cool choice, and I liked the Luke Combs song Oklahoma.
The
only times that I didn't like the music in this movie were the odd, more poppy choices thrown in, like the Boys Are Easy or something song. It just felt like inconsistent with the other music. I think if you're gonna go for country, just do it all country. Or maybe mix in one or two classic rock songs to bring back the nostalgia of Twister, the original. But yeah, those couple of poppy ones felt out of place.
Yeah, that's interesting. No, I agree for the most part with you there. I think the choice to go country, I think the smartest part about this is that it does set itself apart from the first movie. You know, the soundtrack there was kind of this eclectic 90s indie plus grunge, and you know, there's just this whole interesting sound to it, right? Again, it's very of its time. And so I felt like to try, okay, we're going to be in Oklahoma. This movie is about storm chasers in Oklahoma. You've got a character like Tyler, who is clearly somebody who rooted in the South, rooted in that country vibe, you know, with the way he dresses. He's definitely, you know, a modern cowboy type. And so, and so too, you know, a lot of the music comes from almost his perspective too. You know, it's from his team. And so having them be this style of music, I think really fits. So I thought that worked. And now with the, I'll defend at least there, the Boys Are Too Easy song, because there's that moment of when it's being played, it's the first time where they've had their interaction, and she's told him she's going one way, and, you know, then of course they go the other. And it's all about this idea. It's like she thinks she's kind of like fooled him, and, you know, like that she's just fallen, he's just fallen for it and all that, and he hasn't, of course. He knows exactly what she's doing. And so, to me, in that, I think the song works. It's not a song that I really enjoy listening to outside of the film. There's also a Shania Twain song that's on that soundtrack that I don't love either. And I think there's some of the music that is not played in the movie that's on the soundtrack, and they do that a lot anyway. So, but for the most part, I think I really like the choice. I think it's really good. It's a smart choice to do country music. Country music is very popular. You know, there are a lot of great country artists that are on this soundtrack. From, you know, you've got people that cross over, like a Jelly Roll, or you've got somebody like Lainey Wilson, Megan Maroney. Lots of up and comers are on there too. So, yeah, it's a great choice. I love it. And I had a lot of fun with the soundtrack. I own the soundtrack, and this, plenty of the songs end up getting played as I'm driving down in the car, and I kind of love it. So overall, Christy, I think we've been mostly positive with this one. And so I'm pretty excited to just kind of see where then you're going to land with your rating for Twisters.
Yeah, I think, like I was saying, the action and effects really brought it home for me more than anything else. And having Glenn Powell as the lead, I think really does so much for this movie. I think without him, for sure, I wouldn't have been excited to see it. So I will say, just to reiterate, the only things that didn't work for me, I didn't really feel the chemistry between the two of them, and think that the kiss also would have helped. So I was sad that they left that out. Although I get the musical choices, there was only one song I really liked. So I end up giving it overall a 3.5 out of 5 rodeo ropes. Because I think that it's got a lot of good things going for it, but I'm still going to love the original more, and think that there's a couple things they could have done to give this more of that, I don't know, just warm and fuzzy feel that I get from some of the scenes in the original that I don't get here. But I will say my favorite scene of the whole movie was Tyler and Kate in the barn talking about her science project.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good scene. I'm going to give this 4 out of 5 flying houses. I really enjoy this. And part of that, I think, comes from the fact that I didn't expect to like this at all. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that the movie turns out to be so good, and, you know, it made me a believer that Glenn Powell is going to be a big star.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's great in the film. And the movie was just, you know, it's also one of those things where I feel like this is just a good kind of like wholesome film. And to have a major blockbuster like this be something that you could feel like you could take most of your family to, except for, you know, small kids. That's awesome these days. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just not really anything objectionable in it for the most part. And other than the fear factor and that this, you know, the fear of tornadoes and all that kind of stuff that a younger kid might have. I don't know. It was great. So, but Christy, if people wanted to catch up with you, see what else you've got going on right now, where would they find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Bespin Bell. And I will throw out, I've been getting back to reading novels, and I am going to recommend people check out Colleen Hoover books, specifically Verity, if you haven't read it yet, because, oh, talk about hook, line, and sinker. She's got me. So I just wanted to put that in there, too. But you can also check me out on a Finnish show I did with my friends Amanda and Teresa called Sabers and Spells on the Skywalking Through Neverland Network. And what about you?
Well, I am all over social media under the name MattRushing02. So if I'm on that platform, search that name. If I'm there, you'll find me. You can also find me, of course, here on the network doing all the Star Trek talk with Chris Jones, with the great rewatches we've got for anniversaries going on. Having a lot of fun with that. Of course, waiting for Star Trek Strange New Worlds new season to drop. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with John Mills talking about Star Wars each and every week on Aggressive Negotiations, and then a completed show called Outpost talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. But thank you so much for joining us.
And if you feel it, chase it. ¶¶